So our next speaker is the former publisher of the Progressive magazine. He is really a family member of mine. Matt Rothschild was the managing editor when I came to work at the Progressive as an 18-year-old intern. He ran the magazine for many, many years. He just made a crack from behind the curtain, which sounds like Matt. He left the magazine 2 years ago after putting on his last Fighting Bob Fest, but he remains on the Fighting Bob Fest board of directors and helps us out in various ways. He's now running the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, where he is shining a light on political corruption and money in politics in the state of Wisconsin. So he's had a very busy week. Here to tell you about it, Matt Rothschild.
Thank you, Ruth. It's great to see everybody here. So many friends here. We got a beautiful day after all the rain we've had, so that's lucky. We need some luck in our politics, Lord knows. But it was kind of an early Christmas this week with that Guardian story that showed us that Scott Walker and the whole Walker wrecking crew is even sleazier and slimier than we thought. So there we have it. We have all those emails now. I guess we know now why the rigged Wisconsin Supreme Court, at least Walker's buddies on it, wanted to burn those emails and destroy all the evidence, because some of the evidence implicated them. This amount of illegality is just kind of mind-boggling. Walker was going all over the country when he was supposed to be doing work for us. He was going to sit on the laps of millionaires and billionaires, asking him to write five-figure, six-figure checks, not to him, but to the Wisconsin Club for Growth, which was part of the Walker laundry operation, that they laundered the money through these so-called nonprofit groups, and then they ran these political ads. All of that should have been illegal, was illegal at the time, until the Wisconsin Supreme Court retroactively legalized it. Fortunately, that corrupt decision is now perhaps going to be appealed all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court is... It's got a request to take the case from our own district attorney, Ish Ozan, from the DA down in Milwaukee, John Chisholm, and from Larry Nelson, the DA in Iowa County. It only takes four justices to grant this request to take the case. There are four good liberals on the Supreme Court of the United States, so I think they're going to take the case. And I actually think, even at 4-4, the U.S. Supreme Court would rule in favor of the prosecutors and reinstate the John Doe investigation. And what these emails show, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is that Scott Walker should be indicted for crimes. And that Wisconsin Club for Growth and Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and some of these other so-called nonprofit groups should be investigated by the IRS for violating their IRS designations. And that some of these corporations that wrote five-figure and six-figure checks on their own corporate bank accounts should be investigated for violating the law as well. The other thing we need to do, other than hope that the U.S. Supreme Court takes the case and rules the right way, is to do something fundamental, and that is to amend the U.S. Constitution, to say once and for all that corporations aren't persons and money isn't speech. And we will get to that day where we amend the Constitution. That's the answer to the problem of all this corruption fundamentally. Friends, it's my privilege right now to introduce our next speaker, Christine Newman-Ortiz. She's the executive director of Voces de la Frontera. She's one of the best organizers in the country. I was up at the Capitol one day when the Republicans were introducing and discussing one of their anti-immigrant bills, and Christine brought hundreds of people to the Capitol. And you should see the disdain that the Republicans in power show for anyone who disagrees with them. They just can't give people the time of day. They sneer, they laugh, they're part of the bully state that Kevin Alexander Gray talked about earlier. These guys are just kind of high school playground bullies, though. And Christine Newman-Ortiz stood up to them, as did the people she brought to the Capitol, but they weren't listening. So Christine drew a very rational conclusion that it's no use sometimes to bring people to the Capitol with this group in power that doesn't want to listen. So what did she do? She said, we're going to have some civil disobedience. We're going to have a day without Latinos. And so she organized that day. It was a very successful day several months ago. It showed the people and the employers in Wisconsin that you can't mess with us. And that's who Christine is. She's a real fighter. She's a tremendous advocate and a tremendous organizer. I give you Christine Newman-Ortiz. Thank you.
What a great day, and it's great to be here with all of you again. And it's always a great time to be here because we get to hear both national and state and local voices and together really reflect in the moment where we're at. And I wanted to start my comments today with a quote that Voces de la Frontera has on our wall when we first opened our office. That was in 2001. And it's a quote that many of you, I know, will recognize. It's from a German Lutheran pastor who lived during the time of the rise of fascism and eventually was put in a concentration camp when he spoke out against the Nazis. And the quote reads, "First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." And that saying has hung on our wall as a reminder of what can come to pass if good people do not act, if good people remain silent, if people do not understand that injustice knocking on somebody else's door will eventually mean a knock at your own door, and if they close their eyes to injustice around them. And it's a reminder for me that the future is ours to make, and it can either go horribly wrong or it can go in a wonderful direction. And right now, we are all living in a period that's very, very critical, not just for ourselves, but for generations to come. This moment is more than a typical election year. November 8th, when people cast their vote, it will be a national referendum on whether this country rejects the politics of authoritarianism, hate, and division, or votes to uphold the values of diversity, unity, and democracy. The politics of gerrymandering, corporate conservatism, the profiteering as a result of private prisons and mass incarceration of people of color, mass detention, has brought fringe politics into mainstream and reinvigorated a white supremacist movement in this country that we have not seen before. With the political rhetoric of mass deportations, banning of entire religious groups, have also come threats and instigation of actual acts of violence. In Wisconsin this year, a man shot a Puerto Rican father in front of his son, tried to shoot the son, then went next door to the apartment building and shot Hmong parents in front of their Hmong children because they did not speak English, and he told them to go back to their country. We've heard incidents where there's been children's soccer games here in Wisconsin where one team of children was yelling at the other team, wetbacks, go back to Mexico. And there's been other incidents of violence at political rallies and an uptick in hate crimes that are actually being tracked. And that's the danger, the warning sign of the times that we live in, that we must challenge the politics of hate, both in the streets and at the ballot box, and that we must build a united front from the various organizations, many of which are represented here, against this threat. And we have to put out an alternative, a vision and values of a truly democratic and diverse society. And this personally really hit home to me when I went to Cleveland at the protest of the RNC convention. Because at that moment, if you all remember, there was a lot of heightened concern around security for various reasons, but one of which is that the base of supporters who were attracted to Trump's message and access to guns. And it was a very thoughtful decision about how we went and going there and bringing whether or not to bring kids. But once we were there with so many other people, it really affirmed to me just how important it was that we stand up to this kind of politics of intimidation, because that's how it grows. It grows through intimidation. But it's also about the day-to-day organizing of just talking to people, our family, our friends, people in the neighborhood, about the elections and our future. Voces de la Frontera is mobilizing the Latino vote in Milwaukee, talking to tens of thousands of Latino voters and in other parts of the state about turning out in historic numbers in the state where the Latino vote will have impact. And we're building in the wake of what was mentioned, Matt mentioned, the statewide historic Day Without Latinos Immigrants that happened on February 18th, 2016. I mean, we really, that was a mass general strike of tens of thousands of Latinos, immigrants, and allies, a statewide work stoppage that touched both urban and rural communities, where hundreds of businesses closed, and families took their kids out of school and came, and we had a mass presence at the Capitol and around it. And because of that action, we were able to stop an Arizona copycat bill that would have promoted racial profiling and mandated that any public employee take on an immigration enforcement role. As in 2006 in Wisconsin, in 2016, people responded. And through that economic show of power and mass turnout, we will be able to defeat a situation that had no political answer. And that victory has benefited all of us. In the wake of that event, Voces has been building new chapters in Green Bay, Madison, and Walworth County, in using this as a basis to turn out for Election Day on what we hope will be a day with Latinos. Elections in and of themselves will not deliver the larger changes we want to see in society. Elections impact the conditions under which we organize for those changes. The changes we have seen reflected in political platforms reflect what are the forces on the ground. And to turn those demands into reality is going to require linking our struggles into a larger force, a united front that can put tremendous pressure to bear in winning them and building our organizations on the ground to make further progress. We still have time and a lot of work ahead of us before November 8th. In that time, I have gone out in the neighborhood and spoken to people, and it has only reaffirmed to me the absolute necessity of that effort. As organizations representing different groups, we must link our struggles before and after the elections. Our side must deliver a blow to the fringe white supremacist movement that is trying to grow and take hold in this country. And we must use it as a stepping stone for the rise of a popular movement that links the Sanders Youth Movement for Economic Justice, the African American-led Fight for 15 and Against Police Brutality, the courageous LGBT rights struggle, the union fight for all workers to have collective rights on the job and fair trade deals that protect workers in all countries, and the immigrant rights struggle to challenge the politics of racism and scapegoating, and to win immigration reform and refugee rights at all levels of government. Our efforts are humble and often not visible, but we must, in the weeks ahead, commit to work hard to ensure we secure that future we seek. It's an honor to be here with all of you, and I know we're all united in the struggle, so let's make it happen. And on November 9th, we can say, si se pudo. Solidarity, brothers and sisters.
Christine Newman Ortiz.